Good morning. Where I'm sitting, it's 2:12 hours Eastern Standard Time on December 1st. We've reached December, but this is the study for November 30th. Welcome, Ward Green with you again. And we finally also reached the conclusion of our article, Born and Raised. This is the final paragraph, although we have historical notes we could review maybe tomorrow. The arrival of Jesus as Christ. In Hebrew, the word Christ is Messiah. The arrival, 1,000 years after Solomon's temple was completed, was for all believers the most important event in history and led to the fulfillment of many prophecies to our benefit. Now, none of this article or the idea of using chronology or any of what we are attempting to convey is necessarily a teaching. We're not necessarily attempting to teach. For those little children who need to learn, certainly they might learn from listening to these videos, but or the audio. And we have also the idea here that it's not to be dogmatic. It's the idea of faith here is the predominant idea. It's to the idea that faith beats knowledge is a very important thing that I believe is true, that faith beats knowledge, and many people would not agree with that, but that's what I believe. So if you believe that, then it's never about the knowledge or the dogma. That's never the prime thing, but it can benefit our faith if we use knowledge in the correct way. So the timing of the arrival of the Messiah has been established here by astronomy, along with the current historical tradition, meaning all of the facts of secular history that we've been able to glean from Josephus in large measure, but also from other Roman sources, for example. There are many more prophecies that Jesus fulfilled in his earthly ministry than we are capable of evaluating here. Yeah, it would take over the article, basically. But, I mean, we are capable of it, but a reality which is being cited here as being due more to anyone's ability to absorb such a vast amount of information rather than due to my ability as a writer to write it in a way that is adequately cogent. It's not really that difficult to write all the prophecies down. It's just a lot of information. The same is true of the chronological details covered. There's a lot of information. We're not trying to cover every possible detail, although, you know, it would be nice if we could, I think. It's very, very beneficial to me, I find, when I know about the chronology. It just helps me so much more with my faith. However, I've deliberately chosen to end the current chapter regarding these details in such a manner as I believe should offer the reader a marked and decidedly convincing illumination of the congruence of the BG chronology with the truth. This should not be a difficult realization to achieve. Even though I had trouble saying the word realization. This should not be a difficult realization to achieve. The fact that is that the BG chronology is congruent with the truth. This should not be a difficult realization to achieve, as it is in fact true. But equally so, is it believable? The thing about the BG chronology is I wasn't attempting to make it believable. That wasn't the point. It was all about finding the truth. discovering it and writing it down. But that it happens to be believable is just an additional benefit. If we can believe it, and because of this last chapter, I think it's more believable because of the Essene Passover in the year 30 CE. I think this is making it, and this is what makes it so much more believable. It's what makes it believable. By adding this other element to it, that it's not just dry and cold and scientific. It also has something else, which is adding a very different feeling to it because of the Essenes. Thank you to everyone who assisted. But first of all, I skipped over one sentence. I should read this. Yet I believe the achievement here of writing of this article came not without fervent prayer, not only on my own part, but thank you to everyone who assisted in prayer and love. The quote from Ecclesiastes 12 and 10 is that the one about books? Let's look it up. Off camera. 12 and 10. Oh, no, it says the preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. And this is from the King James Version, I believe that's from. But anyway, thank you is what the last message was there. And that ends chapter 12, considering Essenes. And the article was called Born and Raised Messiah, written by yours truly on my own at this point when I wrote this in 2021. Then we have historical notes. Our next article that we're going to be studying, I don't know what it's going to be yet. I almost feel like the Ark of Urartu would be a good one, but the Crucible of Credible Creed also is a good one. But look at how many articles I wrote in the year 2010 here. I wrote Own, which is called Joseph and Own, also, and I wrote Phoenix in 2010. I wrote Moses in 2010. I wrote the Ark of Urartu in 2010. That was when it was released. That's four articles written in 1 year. So that was an intense period. So I think our next article maybe will be one of those four. But maybe I also want to... But yeah, I'm torn because I also... They're all really good. Trojan War is good. I mean, really good. And Before Chronology is really good. And we've done Wild Road already. The Uncut Tut is phenomenal. I mean, these are some of the shorter articles now. True is another one. And Preservation. They're shorter. And they're all very, very important. I believe they're all very useful, helpful study articles, but the references too, like for the work that I did, if I don't write an article, then none of my work gets preserved. So I needed to write these articles. I mean, I'd like to do, are we going to do Moses? I don't know. And when are we going to do Phoenix? And I feel like the Ark of Urartu is beckoning, but the Crucible of Credible Creed might be the most important with regard to the chronology, so maybe we should do it next. But that's all for today, and that's the conclusion of Born and Raised Messiah, an article that I wrote in 2021. And our proverb for today, little children, is from Ecclesiastes 2 and 12. And I, even I, turned toward all the works of mine that my hands had done. Is this what it is? I'm not sure if I've chosen this one or not. Let me think. Yeah, this is it. This is the one. And toward the hard work that I had worked hard to accomplish. And look, everything was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing of advantage under the sun. Nothing of advantage. After all the hard work. And that's basically, that is the theme of Ecclesiastes. I keep saying it. That's the theme of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes, written by Solomon, is that nothing was of any use in life. It was all vain. It was all of no use, is what he meant by that. In other words, it was not of advantage, which is insane, because we think, I'm sure that during his life, everything he did was because he thought it was of advantage, and yet, in the end, he always turned toward the work afterwards and saw that it was of no advantage. That was what Ecclesiastes was written about. Now, 1 Samuel. I didn't get to convert the file. It's not converted yet. Okay, that's all right. I haven't yet converted the file I was going to show you later. But let's just look at this study from yesterday so I can... I'm looking at it so I can find out for sure. Yeah, 1 Samuel 30. And it came about while David and his men were coming to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites made a raid on the south and on Ziklag. So David was just coming home again. He had been sent away by the Philistine army. He was returning to his city where he was living. And the Amalekites proceeded to strike Ziklag, David's city, and burn it with fire. And this was while David was still on his way. And the Amalekites carried off captive the women and all that were in the city, from the smallest to the greatest. They did not put anyone to death, but they drove them along and went on their way. When David came with his men to the city, why, there it was burned with fire. And as for their wives and their sons and their daughters, they had been carried off captive. And David and the people that were with him began to raise their voice and weep until there was in them no power to weep any more. And David's two wives had been carried off captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And it became very distressing to David, because the people said to stone him, for the soul of all the people had become bitter. They were saying to put him to death by throwing stones at him, each one because of his sons and his daughters. So David took to strengthening himself by Jehovah his God, because no one else apparently was helping him at that point. Hence David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech. This is where David talks to the descendant of Eli. Do please bring the ephod near to me. And Abiathar came, bringing the ephod near to David. And David began to inquire of Jehovah, saying, shall I chase after this marauder band? Shall I overtake them? At this he said to him, go in chase, for you will without fail overtake them, and you will without fail make a deliverance. Promptly David got on his way, he and the 600 men that were with him, and they went on as far as the torrent valley of Besor. And the men that were to be left behind stood still. And David kept up the chase, he and 400 men. But 200 men that were too tired to pass over the torrent valley of Besor stood still. And they got to find a man, an Egyptian, in the field. So they took him to David and gave him bread that he might eat, and gave him water to drink. Further, they gave him a slice of a cake of pressed figs and two cakes of raisins. Then he ate, and his spirit returned to him, for he had not eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. David now said to him, to whom do you belong, and where are you from? To which he said, I am an Egyptian attendant, a slave of an Amalekite man, but my master left me because I took sick 3 days ago. We were the ones that made a raid on the south of the Kerethites, and upon that which belongs to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and Ziklag we burned with fire. At this David said to him, will you lead me down to this marauder band? To this he said, do swear to me by God that you will not put me to death, and that you will not surrender me into the hand of my master, and I shall lead you down to this marauder band. Accordingly, he let him down, and there they were, spread disorderly over the surface of all the land, eating and drinking and having a feast on account of all the great spoil that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and the land of Judah. And David went striking them down from the morning darkness until the evening, that he might devote them to destruction, and not a man of them escaped, except 400 young men that rode upon camels and took to flight. And David got to deliver all that the Amalekites had taken, and his two wives David delivered. And there was nothing of theirs lacking, from the smallest to the greatest, and to sons and daughters, from the spoil, even to anything that they had taken for themselves, everything David recovered. So David took all the flocks and the herds which they drove before that other livestock. Then they said, "This is David's spoil." At length David came to the 200 men who had been too tired to go along with David, and to whom they had kept sitting by the torrent valley in Besor, and they came out to meet David and to meet the people that were with him. When David came near to the people, he began to ask them how they were. However, every bad and good-for-nothing man out of the men that had gone with David answered and kept saying, "For the reason that they did not go with us, we will give them none of the spoil that we delivered, except to each one his wife and his sons, and let them lead them and go." But David said, "You must not do that way, my brothers, with what Jehovah has given us, in that he safeguarded us and gave the marauder band that came against us into our hand. And who will listen to you as to this saying? For as the share of the one that went down into the battle, even so will the share of the one that sat by the baggage be." Even so will the share of the one that sat by the baggage be. All will have a share together. And it came about from that day forward that he kept it set as a regulation and a judicial decision for Israel down to this day. When David came to Ziklag, he proceeded to send some of the spoil to the older men of Judah, his friends, saying, "Here is a gift blessing for you from the spoil of Jehovah's enemies. To those who were in Bethel, and to those in Ramoth of the south, and to those in Jatir, and to those in Aroer, and to those in Siphmoth, and to those in Eshtemoa, and to those in Rechal, and to those in the cities of the Jerahmeelites, and to those in the cities of the Kenites, and to those in Hormah, and to those in Borishan, and to those in Athak, and to those in Hebron, and to all the places where David had walked about, he and his men." And that is the conclusion of 1 Samuel 30, and we're approaching the end of the book of 1 Samuel also, very soon. Now, Jeremiah chapter 34, it contains two prophecies according to Clark's commentary. But let's see, we could look at Clark's commentary. Since I'm going to talk about Clark's commentary, we might as well look at it, I suppose, at the same time. Jeremiah 34, Clark, the chapter contains two prophecies. One of them, the first one, predicts the taking and burning of the city and his own peaceful death. But then the siege had let up for a while, right? And the Babylonians were already besieging Jerusalem in the first part of the chapter. And we saw from Jeremiah 32 that it was in the year... the 10th year of Zedekiah that chapter was talking about, which is the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar, but of course that would be 18, the 10th year of Zedekiah being the 18th year, if we count Nebuchadnezzar's year one as being when he took the throne rather than his first official year, which we've always been saying recently, that's how it should be counted. It's remarkable how well that works when we do it that way too. I've been noticing that, in that he also, it says, captured a certain number of important captives. Let me see, is it chapter 52 where it says this? I think it might be. No, it's not. Yes, it is. The 18th year. Yeah. So I think so. I think this is what... here it says it calls it the 7th year. And then the 18th year. This is his official years of the 7th official year. But there's another place where it talks about the, let's look it up, eighth year. Eighth year. Let's see what we can find. I think he took somebody in his eighth year. Oh, yeah, right, right. That was in Chronicles, Second Kings. Second Kings 24, yeah. And in the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar's being king, it wasn't the eighth year of Jehoiakim, because he was only king for 3 months, but in the eighth year of Nebuchadnezzar being king, he took Jehoiakim, but that was in the year 587, which is also called the seventh year of Nebuchadnezzar, because it's his seventh official year, but the eighth year from when he took the crown. So it works fine when we understand this feature. Everything makes more sense. It's still a very interesting thing. It looks like the siege of Babylon was, not of Babylon, the siege of Jerusalem by Babylon. It looks like it was about 20 months or somewhere in the range of a year and some months. But we can see that from the fact that they captured Jerusalem in the 11th year of Zedekiah. So 10 years for him total and some months. Going back, we're in 34 of Jeremiah. And the word that occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and all his military force and all the kingdoms of the earth, the dominion under his hand and all the peoples, were fighting against Jerusalem and against all her cities, saying, this is what Jehovah, the God of Israel, has said, go. So they were currently fighting. Jerusalem was under siege when he wrote this, when the word occurred to him from Jehovah. And you must say to Zedekiah, the king of Judah, yes, you must say to him, this is what Jehovah has said, here I am giving this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he must burn it with fire, and you yourself will not escape out of his hand, because you will without fail be caught, and into his hand you will be given. And your own eyes will see even the eyes of the king of Babylon, and his own mouth will speak even with your mouth, and to Babylon you will come. However, hear the word of Jehovah, O Zedekiah, king of Judah. This is what Jehovah has said concerning you. You will not die by the sword. In peace you will die, and as with the burnings of your fathers, the former kings who happened to be prior to you, so they will make a burning for you. And alas, O master, is what they will say and lament for you, and I myself have spoken the very word, is the utterance of Jehovah. And Jeremiah the prophet proceeded to speak to Zedekiah the king of Judah all these words in Jerusalem, when the military forces of the king of Babylon were fighting against Jerusalem and against all the cities of Judah that were left remaining, against Lachish and against Azekah, for they, the fortified cities, were the ones that remained over among the cities of Judah. The word that occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah after King Zedekiah concluded a covenant with all the people who were in Jerusalem to proclaim them liberty, to let each one his manservant and each one his maidservant, Hebrew man and Hebrew woman, go free, in order not to use them as servants, that is, a Jew who is his brother. So all the princes obeyed, and all the people who had entered into the covenant to let each one his manservant and each one his maidservant go free, in order to use them no more as servants. And they proceeded to obey and let them go. But they turned about after that, and began to bring back the men servants and the maid servants, whom they had let go free, and they went subjecting them as men servants and as maid servants. Consequently, the word of Jehovah occurred to Jeremiah from Jehovah, saying, this is what Jehovah the God of Israel has said, I myself concluded a covenant with your forefathers in the day of my bringing them out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of servants, saying, at the end of 7 years you men should let go each one his brother, a Hebrew man, who came to be sold to you, and who has served you 6 years, and you must let him go free from being with you. But your forefathers did not listen to me, neither did they incline their ear. And you yourselves turn around today and do what is upright in my eyes, in proclaiming liberty each one to his companion. And you conclude a covenant before me in the house upon which my name has been called. Then you turn back and profane my name, and bring back each one his manservant and each one his maidservant, whom you let go free agreeably to their soul. And you subject them to become you are men servants and maid servants. You see, there it says, agreeably to their soul. In other words, if they didn't want to go out from their master, they could remain with him. Therefore, this is what Jehovah has said. You yourselves have not obeyed me in keeping on proclaiming liberty, each one to his brother and each one to his companion, for those who wanted to be free. Here I am proclaiming to you a liberty, is the utterance of Jehovah, to the sword and to the pestilence and to the famine. I'm letting you go free to the bad things, and I shall certainly give you for a quaking to all the kingdoms of the earth, and I will give the men sidestepping my covenant in that they did not carry out the words of the covenant that they concluded before me with the calf that they cut in two, that they might pass between its pieces, namely the princes of Judah and the princes of Jerusalem, the court officials and the priests and all the people of the land who went passing between the pieces of the calf. Yes, I will give them into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of those seeking for their soul, and their dead bodies must become food for the flying creatures of the heavens and for the beasts of the earth. And Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his princes I shall give into the hand of their enemies and into the hand of those seeking for their soul and into the hand of the military forces of the king of Babylon, who are withdrawing from against you men. So Babylon was withdrawing temporarily. Here I am commanding is the utterance of Jehovah, and I shall certainly bring them back to this city, and they must fight against it and capture it and burn it with fire. And the cities of Judah I shall make a desolate waste without an inhabitant. And that's the end of Jeremiah 34. Matthew chapter 8. Now Jesus had been up in the mountain, apparently. Now after he'd come down from the mountain, it says, okay, it doesn't mention that he went up in the mountain in that chapter 7 at the conclusion of it. But after he'd come down from the mountain, he was teaching from the mountain, his Sermon on the Mount. Great crowds followed him when he came down, and look, a leprous man came up and began doing obeisance to him, saying, Lord, if you just want to, you can make me clean. And so stretching out his hand, he touched him, saying, I want to be made clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed away. Then Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses appointed for the purpose of a witness to them. When he entered into Capernaum, an officer came to him entreating him and saying, sir, my manservant is laid up in my house with paralysis, being terribly tormented. He said to him, when I get there, I will cure him. In reply, the army officer said, sir, I am not a fit man for you to enter under my roof, but just say the word and my manservant will be healed, for I too am a man placed under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this one, be on your way, and he is on his way, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. Hearing that, Jesus became amazed and said to those following him, I tell you the truth, with no one in Israel have I found so great a faith, but I tell you that many from eastern parts and western parts will come and recline at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of the heavens, whereas the sons of the kingdom will be thrown into the darkness outside. There is where their weeping and the gnashing of their teeth will be. Then Jesus said to the army officer, go, just as it has been your faith, so let it come to pass for you. And the man's servant was healed in that hour. And Jesus, on coming into Peter's house, saw his mother-in-law lying down and sick with fever. So he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began ministering to them. But after it became evening, the people brought him many demon-possessed persons, and he expelled the spirits with a word, and he cured all who were faring badly, that there might be fulfilled what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our sicknesses and carried our diseases. Isaiah 53 and 4, truly our sicknesses were what he himself carried, and as for our pains he bore them. When Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave the command to shove off for the other side. And a certain scribe came up and said to him, you see, Jesus' disciples were fishermen, so they had boats, of course. And the scribe said to Jesus, teacher, I will follow you wherever you are about to go. But Jesus said to him, foxes have dens and birds of heaven have roosts, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay down his head. Then another of the disciples said to him, Lord, permit me first to leave and bury my father. Jesus said to him, keep following me and let the dead bury their dead. And when he got aboard a boat, his disciples followed him. Now look, a great agitation arose in the sea so that the boat was being covered by the waves. He, however, was sleeping, and they came and woke him up, saying, Lord, save us! We are about to perish! But he said to them, Why are you faint-hearted, you with little faith? Then getting up, he rebuked the winds and the sea, and a great calm set in. So the men became amazed and said, What sort of person is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? It's the end of Matthew chapter 8. So Jesus amazed... Oh, no, it's not. Sorry, I was not done scrolling. When he got to the other side, into the country of the Gadarenes, there met him two demon-possessed men coming out from among the memorial tombs, unusually fierce, so that nobody had the courage to pass by on that road. And look, they screamed, saying, What have we to do with you, Son of God? Did you come here to torment us before the appointed time? But a long way off from them, a herd of many swine was at pasture. So the demons began to entreat him, saying, If you expel us, send us forth into the herd of swine. Accordingly, he said to them, Go. They came out and went off into the swine. And look, the entire herd rushed over the precipice into the sea and died in the waters. But the herders fled, and going into the city, they reported everything, including the affair of the demon-possessed men, the herders of the swine. And look, all the city turned out to meet Jesus, and after having seen him, they urgently urged him to move out from their districts. Why would they urge him to move out from their districts? Because perhaps they didn't want all their swine rushing into the sea, which might have been what they were afraid of. It's hard to say, but it's nearly the end of our study. That's the end of Matthew chapter 8, finally. So the sermon wasn't the Sermon on the Mount. Instructive and powerful. Didn't it give us a great deal of insight into what kind of a person Jesus was? And of course, we see there are other things that Jesus remarkably did, phenomenal things, miraculous things that Jesus did, that teach us more about him, and his disciples kept on learning more, so that they were continually amazed at the things that Jesus did. For example, with the winds and the sea obeying the word of the Lord, our Lord Jesus. So faith, as this chapter of Matthew also shows, is important, but it's just, if you don't believe that, then you can't really be taught that. It's hard to teach that. It's not a knowledge issue, it's an issue of faith. And that concludes our study for today. It's December 1st, and our video for today. The year is 2023, and the time is 0245 hours Eastern Standard Time. But the study is for November 30th, and on my behalf, this is Crow, my beloved wind-up watch, and Cassie, my beloved electronic watch, saying bye for now.